put the gun down.
I'll show you with the box. What was in the box?
Because I envy your normal life.
Put the gun down, David.
It seems that envy is my sin.
No, what's in the box?
Not until you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the fucking box?
Give me the gun.
He just told you.
You lie!
Welcome to the 250. I'm Danielle, and I'm sitting here with...
Iman.
And we're going to talk about Seven today. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Iman.
About myself? I just started writing for The Voice this semester. I like to do, kind of like a weekly think piece on just whatever aspect of a film that I love. I wrote about the cinematography of Children of Men, which is my favorite movie. I wrote about the universality of the love in Brokeback Mountain. So, stuff like that. I try to go in depth with it. And what I really love about doing that is it's kind of helped me better ground my own taste in movies in a way.
Nice,
if
nice.
You under, if you get what I mean.
No, I get that. That's probably why I started this podcast, because, I had to, at least weekly, watch a movie and kind of, think about it for, 30-odd minutes. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Well, your most recent piece was Children of Men, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, read that on halftime. It's pretty good. All right. So, you picked the movie this week, right?
Yeah. Well, I had, a slew of movies, and
you did.
Agreed on Seven.
Why did you pick Seven as one of your list?
Well, I think Seven is particularly interesting because it's actually super high on IMDb's 250, higher than I expected.
This list is weird.
Yeah.
Shawshank is one.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think the major appeal of it to a lot of people rating it high is it actually does just feel super edgy.
Yeah.
Sort of like Fight Club in a way, which is also a Fincher movie.
Yeah.
But the reason I love Seven is because, other than Heath Ledger's Joker, this is probably my favorite representation of a villain in a movie.
Yeah.
Because whereas Heath Ledger's Joker is more on the acting, Kevin Spacey's amazing in this movie too. I think this movie, you get so much about this villain before you even meet him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think it's so genius, especially when they go to his apartment and the neon cross and the reading all these journals. You don't even know if it's a real thing. It could all be a facade and stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much to think about in Gestate and the makeup and set design of each kill.
Yeah.
It looks visually hypnotizing, but it also just tells so much about John Doe himself.
Yeah. No, I thought Kevin Spacey's performance was really good. He was the perfect amount of creepy and just unsettling.
And then also reasonable in a way. When he's talking in the back of the police car, you're kind of I kind of get it.
Yeah. The set design is probably my second. The performances are really good, and then the set design is probably my second favorite thing. Just I think I was reading that the notebooks, in John Doe's apartment, wrote those. They're not just random words. It's legitimate, you need help. Because you wrote a billion notebooks filled with crazy shit, so.
Yeah, and I think Morgan Freeman just picked a random one and just started reading from it.
Yeah.
And it worked out. I have the special edition Blu-ray, and the case is it just looks like a composition notebook. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I think the aesthetic of this movie is really great, and also I think it starts off immediately, especially with the title sequence. I got a very American Horror Story vibe, or American Horror Story kind of
Well, also with that, I think
also
with that, I think it's sort of another reason why it's kind of an important film. It's really been influential in TV, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially the portrayal of police procedurals and these crazy serial killers, in Criminal Minds and CSI and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
If you look at those, some of their, their blueprint kind of feels lifted from Seven, in a way.
Yeah, the use of technology and, the fingerprint thing and all that.
And then the need for, a super intense serial killer almost every week.
It kind of reminded me of Hannibal as well in that sense, with the way the murders were carried out and how
just how meticulous he is.
Yeah, and you don't actually see legitimate violence until the very last scene.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty interesting. Yeah. So I wanted to bring up the performances. I thought Morgan Freeman, I feel either I haven't watched enough Morgan Freeman movies, but I feel this is his best performance that I've seen.
Well, yeah, it's actually really subdued,
which
is what I dig about it, which is something you need because Brad Pitt's performance was a more loudmouth type.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a great balance. It is obviously your kind of stereotypical, the hardened old vet and the new hotshot kind
definitely.
Of. But I think it's really well grounded too.
And I don't know, I just been Morgan Freeman, I either see him play God or an old guy. Like, I feel like now he's just like, I'm old, and I'm just gonna play into that with all of his, like, he's like a bucket list, he's in, like, a new movie where it's about old people, like, pulling off a heist or some shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
So I feel like this is, probably the best performance I've seen him in. Like, he's in Shawshank, mm-hmm. but, like, Shawshank has always just been, like, okay for me, so, like, yeah, it's a good movie.
Well, Shawshank is a totally different discussion.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, too. I think it's good, but, like, not number one good.
It's definitely not number one good. No, there's no way. There's literally no way. Yeah, but I really did like their dynamic. I liked Brad. Brad Pitt also plays, like, the same mm-hmm. person, like, cocky asshole, like, all the time.
Well, there's a lot of great banter between mm-hmm. them, I think. Yeah. Like, one of my favorite parts is when Morgan Freeman's just thinking about what's next, and Brad Pitt's just, like, in the background. He's like, you know what? This is us. And he bends over on a table. This is us. This is us right now. And I'm, like, it's actually... There's a lot of parts that are, like, really sneakily comedic
yeah.
in the movie, which also really help you relate to them on this quest to find him.
Yeah. I think it really easily pulls you mm-hmm. in, because, like, the crimes are so, like they're gross and, like, just, like, horrifying to look at, but they're also, like, almost visually arresting, I would say. So that way it pulls you in, and then their, like, morbid interest in this serial killer yeah. is pretty interesting, because, like, Brad Pitt obviously wants to, like, kill the guy. He thinks he's, like, just, like, a piece of... Which, he's, like, he's a horrible person, but, like, also, exactly. they also have this, like, morbid interest in finding the guy, because it's just such a unique serial... He's such a unique serial killer and so calculated, which is one of the things I really liked about the movie, was just, like, the twist, like, when, what's-his-face, Sloth was, like, alive. Like, I was watching with my house member, like, what?! Yeah, I really liked that.
Like, Sloth is, like, probably the most unsettling part of the entire movie.
Horrifying, just, yeah.
The patient, that's when you, like, you know this guy's crazy throughout each kill, like, okay, this gluttony thing, he had this fat guy kind of eat himself to death. He's really, like, on the nose about these, but I think Sloth is just like, okay, this guy is past insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And Morgan Freeman says it, he's like, worst of all, he's like, he names all these traits of him, and he says, worst of all, he's patient.
Yeah.
And, like, that's probably the scariest thing about this character.
Yeah.
The whole movie is kind of predicated around around everyone's perception of this killer before anybody even knows this killer, which is why I think which is what brings me into this movie and why I love the villain. It's the writing and the direction, the set design create this whole character before you even meet him, and then Kevin Spacey comes and, like, kind of, like, twists it around a little, but also it's kind of exactly what you expected,
too. Yeah, it's, like, it's more, I guess, he's, like, more mundane mm-hmm. than you would be expecting. He's just, like, a crazy, very similar to, like you said before, like, the Joker and Batman, mm-hmm. where, like, all of his moves are, like, predetermined. Like, he's, like, 10 steps ahead of everyone. And, like, I really liked the twists in this movie. I always, whenever I think twists, I always think Christopher Nolan, because he mm-hmm. loves a good twist. But I feel like this movie is, like, the right way to do twists, because I feel like Christopher Nolan's, like, all about the twist, and that's, like, all he's about, and just, like, never really focuses on, like, developing other things. But I really liked the twist in this movie, because it was just enough of, like, just enough to be like, oh my god, but also there were other things to worry about other than, like, what twist is coming next. And I really loved at the end how, like, Brad Pitt became, like, the rat killing, and I was like, just,
what I also like about it is that it's more organic in that this twist sort of happened because his plans got messed up when they found his house a little too early.
Yeah.
Because, like, I wonder, like, what was he going to do with, like, the wrath and the envy originally?
Yeah.
And then he switches up his plans, and that's what the twist is. So it almost doesn't even feel like a twist. It just feels like an organic part of the story because he had to improvise, and this is what he came up with, and it ended up working perfectly. Yeah. Whereas a lot of movies with twists, you're like, you know that a twist is coming. This one, you don't... I didn't think that it's set up for a twist.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah. I think, also, I went in knowing the twist, because I'm one of those, like, movie spoiler type of persons, so, like, knew, like, the end of this
and
movie.
And what's in the box is just, like...
It's like a thing.
Everyone knows. If you're a movie buff, you know what's in
exactly.
the box.
Exactly. So, like, I hadn't seen the movie until, like, a couple of days ago, but I, like, knew that was coming, but mm-hmm. I was still, like, pretty, like, engrossed by the movie, and still, like, a bunch of the other twists got me, and just, like, the whole movie kind of pulled me in anyway, even though I knew what was happening at the end.
Well, I think even when you know, like, I'm pretty sure, like, your knowledge of what was in the box was just like, oh, it's Brad Pitt's wife's head, okay? Yeah. But did you know, like, the context of it?
Oh, I'm really bad about movie spoilers, and I, like, straight up just, like...
read the whole synopsis.
Yeah, I do that. I'm sorry. It was still a very good movie, though. Like, it still, like, pulled me in. I still, like... I didn't, like, read the whole synopsis. I think I read, like, an overview of the movie at some point, so I knew it was, like, Seven Deadly Sins. I knew, like, Gwyneth Paltrow's head was in the box, but I didn't know, like, the whole plot. But, like, I knew, like, some of those twists were coming, but I still, like, it still, like, pulled me in and was still, like, really great.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, just a testament to how masterful Fincher is.
Yeah.
He's
he and Kevin Spacey, just really great. House of Cards, have
you seen it? Yeah, they did the first episode. He directed the first episode of House of Cards, and I love House of Cards. But, yeah, I mean, almost everything Fincher does, I love. I still am getting over Gone Girl.
Yeah.
Gone Girl.
I remember watching that movie, and my friend had read the book, and so she was, like, waiting for a reaction at the end, and I was literally just like, what? It got to me so bad. Yeah, it's so great.
Yeah, but I feel like Gone Girl was like a story that, like, if anyone but Fincher did it, like, it would not have had that impact.
It would have come off like corny, I would think.
Yeah, he has this weird mastery over like an unsettling tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that really gnaws away. It feels cold.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Yeah. Like, especially in this movie. Like, the city they're in is unnamed.
Yeah, it's just like a random.
But it kind of has its own identity too. Like, it's always raining most of the time.
Yeah.
It's really. And Morgan Freeman's always like, oh, this city sucks, man.
Yeah,
I need to get out of here.
Yeah. I think he has this, like, mastery of, like, capturing darkness without having it feel corny. Because I feel like nowadays, like, everything goes dark. But I feel like he was probably one of the first to catch on to that 90s, like, everything is awful, darkness, grungy thing.
It's a very 90s feeling movie of the time. The end credits was so 90s.
Very 90s. But, like, still, like, he does it in such a way that doesn't feel corny. Like, one, because he kind of helped pioneer that kind of aesthetic. And also just, like, he's really good at directing
movies. Just knows what he's doing. He really knows... Especially in the editing room, like especially with Fight Club. Like, Fight Club is really well directed and edited.
Mm-hmm.
Fight Club could have been so just a machismo corny movie.
Yeah.
So easily. But, you know, he makes it something deeper.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think.
He's a really great director. Yeah. Okay. Also, I looked up some fan theories. I like looking up fan theories about movies. Apparently, okay, I want to know what you think about this. Apparently, some people think that, like, Morgan Freeman's character, Somerset, like, knew, like, was feeding John Doe information the whole time, like, during the movie. Because, let me find the thing. Okay. So, first of all, Mills is new in town, and not many people know him. Somerset has been to his apartment, and I'm assuming he's the only one of the people to be invited there since they moved in. Somerset has been working as a detective for quite some time, and is very aware of the process of bribing for information. When the photographer arrives at the crime scene, he says, like, they pay police for information, and they pay well. And then he's involved in corrupt activities, already involved in corrupt activities, like finding John Doe's apartment through the library records, and since Tracy has no one to talk to in town, he's the only one that knows that she's pregnant. And then in the final scene, John Doe says, like, she begged for her life and the life of the baby inside her. And then he says, oh, he didn't know. And Somerset looks, like, surprised, like he'd already, he'd fed him that information. And then the last point may be unrelated, but I don't know what this means. In the scene, John Doe is surrendering and says, I know you, but it's hard to tell who he's looking at. And I believe he's looking at Somerset, but I could be wrong. And if he's looking at Somerset, I wonder why he says that he knows him. So... I can poke holes in this theory pretty easily, I think.
Well, I think that you have to look at Somerset as a character as a whole. I think his moral... when you look at Somerset in the movie and the things he says, even his, like, little quote at the end...
Yeah.
I think even there it just goes against what this theory would pose. I don't think he would... he does corrupt things like... using the library records and whatnot, and he knows, like, the ins and outs of... the corruption and bribery in the police station in this town, because this town is obviously not a good town, but at the end of the day, he's a guy that just wants to catch the bad guy, and he goes to whatever means.
Yeah, and I think that's what, it's on Reddit, and so I think that's what most of the people were replying. Like, someone said, like, if she was begging for her life, she'd probably be like, please, I'm pregnant, and that's, like, clearly
exactly.
where he got that information. And two, I think that's kind of the core of his character, like, where, like, I think there's a cut scene that they were supposed to film, but I think they ran out of money, where the beginning of the movie is actually supposed to be Somerset, like, at a house where he wants to, like, retire to, and then, like, it's in the country, it's outside of, like, the city, and it's kind of, like, more pure than the city, and I think it kind of implies, like, that's where he belongs, and he takes, like, a token with him, and he, like, takes that with him, like, throughout the movie to kind of, like, reassure him that that's where he's gonna go. So I think, yeah, I think it kind of plays into this whole, like, moral thing, like, he doesn't belong in the city, and he really doesn't want to be there, because he's, like, he wants to rise above it, and he also, like, he does all of those, like, corrupt things to, like, catch his man, as opposed to, like, just be a bad cop.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a cop for a long time in that city. He knows that, he knows exactly what kind of shit goes down in this city.
Yeah.
This was a particularly bad one. I don't think he would help facilitate. I don't, it just doesn't fit with him in a way. That would have been a corny twist.
Right.
If that were
true. That would have, I would have been like...
That would have been something to like roll my eyes at.
Yeah. That, I feel like that would have just been a twist for a twist's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, the twist here, it's organic to the story. It's not... They could have... It would have worked even without a twist.
Yeah.
Is the thing here. And then kind of turns it a little over his head, and then brings it all full circle, and it involves Brad Pitt's character. They just did it so well.
Yeah. No, I really liked how they did it in this movie, because I don't know, I just, like, we've done a bunch of Christopher Nolan movies on this podcast, and every time I've just been, like, super disappointed, like, with the way he does twists.
You don't like the twist, like, in The Prestige?
No, I just that was weird. I just feel like every time, it's not even like I didn't like the twist, I just feel like most of the time he's just focusing on getting to the twist as opposed to, like, caring about, like, character and, like, developing the story. It's really just like, look at that, I tricked you, and you're like, great, but, like, I don't care about anything else in this movie now. Like, I think, like, yeah, no, I can never get behind, you know, his, like, big twist, because I feel like that's, like, all he really cares about for me.
Well, the one that most people talk about with cheap twists is Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Obviously, with where he comes from.
Yeah.
Although, I love The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, The Sixth Sense is, like, his thing, and then he just, like, screwed up every other chance that he got.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Avatar The Last Airbender, that was devastating.
Yeah, what was the twist there? It sucked.
Like, literally, you just, like, didn't watch the show is the twist.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think this movie is, like, pretty masterful, and I really enjoyed it.
I liked it, too. I mean, yeah, I think it's in, like, the 30s, though, on the 250.
Yeah, so you want to guess the number?
Like 34.
It's 22.
22. That's even higher. Oh my god.
It's really high.
It's super high. Yeah.
So yeah, I think Erica had said this on another episode, but we were talking about how, like, the list is very, like, male movie driven. Mm-hmm. I guess, like, very, like, dude movies. Like, the top 10 is, like,
Shawshank,
Godfather 2, Dark Knight, yeah.
Good, the Bad, the Ugly, 12 Angry Men is on there.
Yeah, Schindler's List, like, fine. But, like, yeah, it's very, like, the top 10 is all, like, dude movies. Like, they're all, like, good movies, but they're all, like, really just, like...
Yeah, I cry every time I realize Brokeback Mountain's not in the 250.
Yeah, it's, like, it's not a very comprehensive list, I realize. But, yeah, I think 22, I don't know. I really like this movie. I really enjoyed it. I don't know about 22, because there are some things that, like, probably should be higher than they are. And I don't think 7... I don't know. It just, like...
Well, there's this, like I said earlier, like, this edgy appeal. You go into... When I first got into this movie, I think I must have been, like, 15, and I was like, 7 Deadly Sins is a cool thing.
Right? Like
that, that was a thing, and that's what brought me into it, and I rented it from the library, and I was just like... I didn't know what I was blown away by exactly, but it was just, like, this edgy style to it. And it was also obviously very interesting, and these kills were really, really cool to look at. And I think that adds to why it's so high. Like,
yeah. No, it's a very good movie. Do you think Fight Club should be above it, do you think? Like, what's your opinion on that?
I have personal ties to Fight Club. I just love Fight Club personally.
Mm. Fair, yeah. So it's Fight Club's 10, so it's in the top 10.
I don't know about that. But, like, I do think Fight Club's better. I've been thinking about, like, what's my favorite Fincher movie, and it's just so hard to rank them sometimes. Like, I always thought Fight Club was it, but then I'm like, Social Network's really good. Social Network's the one, like, you don't expect it
that's
a Fincher movie, but
that's what I was gonna say.
It's just, like, it is super cold.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I think, yeah, because Fight Club and, like, 7 seem to be cut from the same cloth.
Exactly.
Like, they both have Brad Pitt. But, like, in other senses, they have kind of this same, like, very, like gruesome, like, kind of feel to them, and just very violent. But, like, yeah, feel to them, but Social Network does have the, like, kind of trademark coldness, I would, I guess.
Yeah. That Fincher, I mean, the same same thing comes from, like, Gone Girl is a super cold. The color grading of Gone Girl is cold as hell.
Yeah.
And Zodiac, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Social Network might be my favorite Fincher movie, I would say, too. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Seven was really good. I think Seven might be two, actually. Yeah, I'd never seen it before, but
I'm glad I made you watch this movie.
Yeah, it was, like, a fun watch. I, like, really enjoyed it.
It's a fun movie. It's, like, fun. That's the thing about it, too. Like, sometimes movies aren't, like, I love Zodiac, but Zodiac is such, a drag. It's 3 hours of just, okay, I think I found a clue. Oh, wait, this clue didn't lead anywhere. For 3 hours. Seven kind of is, like, fast and, like, always fast talking. You always get to, like, another set piece. There's seven set pieces, so.
Yeah. No, yeah, I was thinking about this while I was watching. I feel like, this is gonna sound, like, very, like, old-timey, but, like, they don't make movies like this anymore, where it's, like, I don't know, it's just, like, I feel like most of, like, it did have this whole, like, philosophical, moral, like, kind of underpinning, but it's really just kind of, like, the thrill of the chase type of thing.
Exactly,
it's,
like, yeah.
It's really enjoyable to watch.
This movie, I feel like, also is just, like, I think they were having a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
And not trying. Nowadays, you see a lot of checkboxing, like, how can we get this demographic in? How can we get this demographic in? And what appeals? How are we going to be able to cut this trailer to look good? Because I don't think the 7 trailer is that interesting.
I haven't seen it.
It's also a very 90s trailer, so it's hard it's hard to get into, like, 90s trailers. They're always, like, just really loud noises. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, just like that. And it's just literally Morgan Freeman saying, there are 7 deadly sins, and then he counts them down. And
great. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just, like, a fun, it's, like, really light. Like, it's weird to say, because, like, it's, like, not light.
Obviously.
Like, because there's, like, lots of dead bodies and, like,
it's definitely a movie you could actually just pop in and have fun.
Almost,
Like, I wouldn't pop in Schindler's List, because that's a heavy movie.
Yeah, you're, like, gonna be, like, sad afterwards.
Or maybe not even a sad movie, but, like, I don't know. I don't know where I was going. Like, there's a lot of movies that, like, you wouldn't just pop them in, because there's a lot going on. You have to, like, take it all in.
Last episode we did Blade Runner, and we were talking about how
Blade Runner is like a top three for me.
Yeah, but,
like,
you can't do that with Blade Runner.
Exactly. I wouldn't put that movie in, like, any time of day.
Like, let's just watch Blade Runner and just have a real, like, fun, light night. That's, like, not gonna happen. Yeah. But I feel like I could do that with Seven, which is very counterintuitive, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun to be had with it, is the thing. Because it's also, like we've been saying this whole time, it's masterfully, like, directed, composed, the set design, the makeup, and deep, gruesome, edgy, whatever, but it's also, like, fun.
Yeah.
For some reason.
I feel like just the clues, like, connect with one another, and you're like, and then, like, oh, and you, like, at the end, like, you kind of get to figure out that Brad Pitt's gonna be the wrath killing, and you're, like, super excited that you, like, it clicked with you, and, like, I don't know.
It's one of those things, the best kinds of twists are sort of the ones where, literally, like, you're figuring it out as
it's happening,
and then you're like, oh damn, is it this? Yeah. And then he says, become wrath, and then it reaffirms what you thought, rather than just him turning around and saying, you're wrath.
Yeah.
There's a build up, the music. Oh,
the music
I love
the movie was really good.
The camera work in that scene, did you notice? Brad Pitt, whenever it's on Brad Pitt or Morgan Freeman in that final scene, the camera is shaky as hell, but on Kevin Spacey, it's on a tripod the whole time, completely steady.
Yeah.
And is such a Fincher thing.
Yeah.
Such a Fincher thing.
Like, yeah. So great. Like, I don't know. Like, something, like, you would, like, barely notice unless you're just, like, super into it. But yeah, it's great.
Well, that's the sort of things that, like,
it just creates this feeling.
That, like, make a great director, like, if I weren't, like, super into movies, I would have never noticed that, but I would have still elicited the feeling from it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know why I'm getting a certain feeling, or I wouldn't even realize that.
Yeah.
But it adds to it so much.
Yeah, no. So great. Any final thoughts about this movie?
Final thoughts about Seven. I always loved Seven since I first saw it. And like I said, it's just the perfect representation of a pure villain in a movie, because they build up. You get to know him before you meet him.
It's one of those, like, the monster scarier when you don't see him.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's like a Jaws type thing almost. Yeah. And Kevin Spacey's so good in it. And there's a lot to talk about with it, and there's a lot of fun to be had. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Seven is great. I don't know if it's 22 great, but it's great.
There's a lot of movies.
Yeah. Lots of movies out there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for us. You can follow the Voice Podcast Network to listen to more podcasts like this one and Taste Test and Stripped and our sports podcasts. You can go on GeorgetownVoice.com to read more articles and go on Halftime and read some of Iman's articles and just generally enjoy yourself. You can follow me on Twitter at DNHewitt96. Do you have a Twitter?
I don't have
a Twitter. You don't have a Twitter.
I have a YouTube account where I
make short films. Oh, what's your YouTube account? Do that.
Noodles Movies.
Noodles Movies.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, people. Probably not first, but you know, whatever. It's fine.
You know.
Go to Noodles Movies. Check out Iman's short films. You can follow The Voice on Twitter at GTown Voice. And we have a Facebook page, so like follow us on that. Follow Halftime on Facebook and Halftime on Twitter at HalftimeGU. And I believe that's it. Goodbye.
This was fun.
Bye.